is going to make it. Lon Henry, our...
I think Karen's going that way, but...
Yeah, they know where the entry is, I think. Okay. We're just honored. I didn't plan to start this, but I figured if I didn't get up here, we'd just keep talking, which would be fine. I just saw Lon and Henry come in, and I thought if we can just have time to celebrate a wonderful brother and uncle to all of us. And I didn't mean for it to get quiet, because we're not used to that in our family. So I guess we'll go ahead and get started. My son said he'll make some noise back there. No, to me it's funny whether to have this. This isn't Tommy's shtick, you might say, because he wasn't into a lot of formalities and honoring him, although he loved to be honored, right? But he did it his way. And so I'm really going to turn it over to my good friend, also nephew on my wife's side, David Kokas, who's also our pastor here, one of our pastors, and he's known Tom pretty well over these years, maybe not as well as some of us, but pretty well, and Tom used to come here. And so, David, even though Lana and them are not here, why don't we go ahead and let's just make them feel, are they in the audience yet?
They're in the building.
They're in the building. Anyway. So a lot of good memories ahead, and time to celebrate a life, and did I say wife? I'm sorry, wives, I should say. Well spent.
Dave, memorial service, certainly there's the emotion of sadness, of missing someone that is no longer on this earthly plane, but it's meant to be a celebration. A celebration of the life, and today we celebrate Tom's life. He was a very special person, and he impacted a lot of people over the years. And I just want us to agree together that these moments that we have, we can share together in the presence of the Lord and remember him, not just what he said, what he did, or I'm sure different ones in the room have a lot of memories, but the heart that was there. And Father, we ask that you bless this time. And we know that when it comes to death, it's something we all try to avoid. In moments like this, I guess we all have to face our own mortality. But we choose to experience a joy with you during these next few moments in celebrating Tom's life and the fact that he's passed on into a better and greater place than this earthly plane. Help us and open our eyes to understand our own lives in a better way. We're here for such a short time, and may we have a deeper awareness of your purposes in our life during these times. Amen. Jeff, would you like to?
Like to sing with me, the church is one foundation.
Please, would you like to stand?
Thank you.
I can't really say that I knew Tom all that well. I was only with him, a number of times over the years, but not that many. In earlier years, I remember my impression of him, of course, was one that was very intelligent, good sense of humor, very warm. He didn't seem to be too much of a religious person. I don't know, did I get that right? But with a lot of integrity. In the latter years, and just in the last couple years, Tom has come to service here a number of times. And as he's been in ill health, I've noticed a softening with him. It was more of a spiritual openness. And I know in the latter part of his life, I think he discovered more of his heart in that way between him and God. But in his history, and I know Fred is going to speak about his accomplishments, he did many things, I want to share with you what I feel that the person he was on a heart level. I believe that Tom really had a heart that sought the truth, cared very deeply about justice. And although, especially in earlier years, he would never give God the credit, I believe it was God that created that heart that beat within him. A very intelligent man. He was given to causes. He was moved by the human plight and the human condition and the problems that are out there. Many people will read about it in the newspaper and be upset, but Tom was one to do something about it. He fought for the underdog. He fought for the one that's rights were taken away. And in all that he did, I think inside, there was something deep within him that knew that what was happening was not just or right, and he wanted to see the truth in place of that. A lot of people don't exactly fit into the religious boxes or the church system. And if we try to define a person with their standing with God simply by their church attendance, I think we really miss the boat. Some people are moved away from church or offended by it because of their earlier experience. I can understand that. Myself, I love church. But I've known a lot of people that have suffered abuse in religious systems. And unfortunately, their view of God is warped by how they were treated in church. And it says in the Word in the Bible that God looks upon the heart. And although with us maybe it's easy to evaluate someone's religious, they're not religious, I think deeper than religion is the human heart that God has created and what he's put in that heart. And religion can never quite capture or fully define the unique heart that God has created within a person. I feel this about Tom. He had a heart that really sought God, even though he would never say he was doing that, because he had a heart that sought the truth. And there was a warmth in there that maybe many people didn't see because he was, again, very mental, very analytical, and he presented that side first and foremost. But beyond that, and on a deeper level, there was a real compassion for people, a real caring about people. So this day, Tom, we honor you. It's unfortunate that we take these moments when someone is no longer with us. It'd be better in a person's life if we could have more times like this or be able to realize how important they are to us. But we take this time to honor the person that you were in this lifetime, the heart, the unique qualities that God worked within you, what you gave to so many people. And we know now that you are with the Father, who one that you maybe tried to deny earlier in life or didn't know existed, but nevertheless, God saw your heart, and I know you're with him now. And we just, we again celebrate, and we honor what you gave to so many. And my prayer is again that we can gain from this as we look at a person that we, and remembering him right now, beyond our personalities, beyond our life experiences, beyond the little roles we play, and we all have all these roles, we have a heart. We were all created in the image of God. We have special things that God has put within us. And whether they're displayed in a religious context or not, I don't think that's so much the issue. But may God open our eyes to see what he's put within us and to realize that life is short, and let's share what we have. Let's give to others what we've been blessed with.
Cheryl?
I got to spend a lot of time with Tom different ways, and as some of us had the fortune, because I was the youngest and needed the most care and discipline. And Tommy was good at that. But he's also had a caring heart. And in my junior year in high school, I went back to live with him because my dad couldn't take any more. And actually, it was a defensive situation. My brothers felt it'd be better if I lived with Tom, and Tom welcomed that. And I had heard about Tom because he didn't live with us from the age of about 13 or 14 on until didn't come back and ready to live in San Diego into the 59, 60, or maybe later than that, later 60s, yeah. So, but I had the fortune to go back to visit him and tell you about his different times. I got also a lot of time to talk with Tom, and I went back later in college after I came out of the military and went there, and that was a little bit to his benefit because I was a lieutenant and he was being persecuted for being a communist, which he wasn't ever, but although he may kid somebody, he was, but he was really just for a lot of social needs that needed to change in the South. And probably other places too, but definitely in the South because a lot of persecution. So I'm kind of going out of my context here, but but I will get back to that. So to me, it was really a blessing, and the benefit, of course, was the fact that I was a military officer, and he was supposed to be born in Russia. Actually, he was a sergeant in the Army during World War II. So it's kind of funny how people get labeled. But that's some of the racist mentality of the South in the 1940s, and of course later too. Tom Ludwig, he was the oldest of all our family, had a lot of responsibilities. He had his eye put out at about the age of 5, and it was a serious blow. My father was very responsible because my mother was ill. And so Daddy worried a lot about things, and so he kept Tommy from doing a lot of chopping wood and dangerous things that might, you know, lose another eye. My mother was well for a few years in the beginning, and he got a good start in his education, learned to read relatively quickly, and had a good memory. And she was a teacher, and her sister, Aunt Matt, was also a teacher. So when her mom got a little sick later on, they could go up, and Aunt Matt would take care of my mom, and also, and the family, of course, take care of my mom. And then Aunt Matt would teach him at school, his own aunt. And she was a real... a real Christian saint. She lived the life. Didn't talk as much about it, but she lived it. So songs and poetry and things were in his life in the beginning, and there was that Christian influence of knowing how much God loved them. In Mama getting ill, a lot of responsibility was put on Tom because he was the oldest, and after about 2 or 3 kids came along, and they came along pretty fast. By every 2 years, then he took on different responsibilities of watching mother, but then pretty soon and helping dad and so on, and started had daddy kept him out of school some to take care of my mom and my aunt. By this time he was just old enough to start helping daddy on the farm and stuff, because daddy had a farm, and he had always had a garden and a farm all his life, and he had other jobs where he sold produce. So Aunt Elizabeth felt we got to save this boy from not getting a good education. She knew he was bright, and she was the daughter of a poet laureate of the state, and her father was Secretary of State, and this is my grandfather, and so she knew this, we can't just let this kid get swallowed up in poverty. And so she asked him to come out of California. She was a, I would say, moderately wealthy in our eyes. She's actually probably upper middle class, but she had a few houses, and she managed money, and she had a good providing husband, and a son who was more of an introvert, intellectual, and Tom was definitely an extrovert, and it was a good balance. In fact, there's a picture over here that says, and she's apologizing for her son grimacing. He was about 4 years older than Tommy, but they were joking about something, and it says, well, I caught a picture of him and something my aunt must have said, but actually Tom was always kidding about stuff, joking, but he was also highly motivated about certain ideals in life and schooling. So he came here in the eighth or ninth grade and went to Roosevelt Junior High, and he came in with his Arkansas language, which was very, very good in Arkansas. But it was funny in the classroom. And so I remember he got up and gave a speech, and the teacher would give him A if he learned this speech by Rudyard Kipling of if when all things about you are difficult and goes on like that, you know, then if you do all these things, you'll be a man. So he got up and says, if when all things about y'all are difficult, y'all can always just bear with it, you know, and don't let the, and he could still do this a few days ago. He still memorized this poem. And maybe he still does today too. So she says, Tommy, the class was all cracking up. She says, Tommy, you better come in after class. I know you know this poem, and I know you know it well, and I want to see you get that good grade, so I'll see you after class. And because she was cracking up herself. You know. So in his debate, though, they recognized his speech ability, and when he got to the high school the next year, the debate captain got a hold of him, and he started working on his grammar. And so even a couple of weeks ago when I was visiting, in the last several years, there was always here and there a little correction of my grammar and my pronunciation of a word. You know, there's just a little too much Arkansas still left there. And I see people nodding. But and so he really learned to present the arguments very well that way, and he got into city offices and gave speeches, of course, and so he got elected, and he was a very outgoing guy, and got elected to offices all the way through school, and his senior year, he was senior class president, later student body president. He hobnobbed around with some of the Brahma, the intellectuals and the rich people of the school, because his aunt lived in a fairly wealthy area, and he could wear a suit now rather than farm clothes. And so he ended up being very popular among the upper class, but he's always reached out to people of all types, because at San Diego High in that year was over 3,000 students. Many blacks, many Mexicans, and of course, wealthy people from Mission Hills and Upper Golden Hills, and North Park, for that matter. So he got very much involved. Finally, his senior year, he was elected to be student body president, won by 800 and something to 250 over his opponent, who was the editor of the paper and everything. And so out of these achievements, which was like 3 years continuously always in the CSF, California Scholastic Federation, some of these people know they have kids that have been in that. It's a very high honor. You'd have to have a lot of A's and very few B's, at least three A's and been some B's is okay, but after that, you know, any F's, of course, you're out of there. As you can see, I didn't take after him anyway. But I do say this, he did help me in getting a greater academic orientation, I think, because mine was more, I think we're all gifted in things, and I don't know where mine was, but I like sports, and I was hoping that was it. He ended up working for the Union Tribune, writing high school articles for them. And there's a thing over here about him on that. And by the time he was a senior, he was chosen as a valedictorian. And that's, of course, grades and ability to speak. But it's he never bragged about these things. He said, oh, there was a lot smarter people in there than me. But he says, they just chose me because I could, you know, talk and stuff. But he got a scholarship for Harvard and Berkeley and some other schools, but Harvard didn't have as much, they didn't have quite the benefits for him, he said. In other words, he could go up to Berkeley pretty easily, but to Harvard, to go all the way back there, it's expensive. And so anyway, he chose Berkeley, and that's another reason, of course, he chose Berkeley, because Tom was basically, whatever you want to call him, a radical. Okay, he was a radical guy, too, you might say. And he was very much oriented into that type of lifestyle as Berkeley, where there was a more freedom of expression and not as much tradition. And he was coming out of the Depression, seeing a lot of poverty in the United States at that time. He was wanting to see what he could do. Well, the war came, but he graduated in 42, Phi Beta Kappa, which is like summa cum laude, a high, all A's and very, you know, very few B's. Predominantly just cracked the grades is what he said, and yet he, I'm sure he had a lot of fun too, knowing Tom. But he came out of the service, he went into the service because the war was on, 42 when he graduated. He graduated from high school in 38, college 42. He had an eye out. Could have probably missed the draft, but the recruiting officer talked him into a job there. He said, "You can work right here in San Francisco, and you work with the USO, all those pretty girls, and actresses and actors and stuff." And I don't know if he said that. I'm ad-libbing again. It's a little Tom isn't throwing in here, but but he took that, and then they said we need Japanese. People from the United Japanese Americans. We're fighting a war against Japan, and we need people to decipher information, to spread propaganda, do different things. And so he went around recruiting Japanese American students who he claimed were better students than he was, because he says those guys just cracked the A's all the time. That's all they did, was those girls that just sit in their dorm and study, you know. And we all know what that is. That's not fair, but anyway. So he recruited mostly men, of course, and then he went up to their camps, the one up in near Lone Pine, forget the name of it, anyway, and other ones. And then they also wanted him to go work with the Indians, American Indians we're talking about, to get them. The Navajo spoke a language that nobody, other countries had never deciphered. At least to their knowledge. And so they used him for recruiting those people. And so he lived among the Indians and recruited them. And of course, they didn't have to be drafted. I mean, they couldn't be drafted. They have to, volunteer. And Tommy always had a way with people of working with all races and never, whether they're rich or poor or one color or another color, he just didn't see color that much, and he liked the different cultures, but he had the ability to bring them in and get them in the service. So that's what he did during the military and graduated from the military, got out of the military as a sergeant first class. And but he decided, well, I have to start my life what I really want to do in life, and that was to help the poor, because we were poor in Arkansas. And he saw the oppression of the blacks, and that was his big goal. So he hooked up with a man who had been who actually was a minister and gone to seminary and everything, but his seminary leader says, you know, there's a lot of problems in the South, and we'd like to see you do something to really help the society there. And that particular man took it up, and he was a strong Christian man who organized a school called Highlander Folk School. And that's probably partly where he got this, the communist the labeling that threw on him, because the racist people in the South throw that on anybody that's trying to change their traditional way of living. And so Tommy went there and was one of the directors, became one of the directors there, Franklin Roosevelt's wife, Eleanor, was very social-minded, and she attended there. And when I say attended, she visited. I don't know how long she stayed, but Tom got to meet her. Later on, Martin Luther King came there. Rosa, so you met him. Rosa Parks was actually a person who stayed in his home, because if she stayed in the school and a black lady was there, or any lady person that stayed in their home, they're black in those days, would be good. The people would get persecuted. So they had her stay there because Tommy had four kids and it looked like she was babysitting. But she was part of the training there to, and she's the lady that started, you know, the boycott in Montgomery, I believe it is, Alabama, that started off the whole movement of getting more rights. I don't know where I am in here, but I'll try to keep moving on here. Tommy's effect on our family varied because of his being away, but as always, as an ideal, we saw a man who had used his intelligence, used his verbal abilities, and did care about people. But we didn't. Our contact was limited during several years, except I had opportunity, I say, of being with him a couple of times in those years. But it did help us as far as our, getting our education going on, because this, in those days there was not the scholarships and different things, although Bill got one for his running ability, and so he went to state, and that helped, of course, get me going too later. But of course, the GI Bill helped a lot too, let's face it. Tom, later, during some of this time, he was hired by other people because he was a good organizer, and he worked with farmers, farmer unions, and got them